Fightful.com.
Famous Men of the Middle Ages, Part 4. Charles Martel, 714 to 741 AD, and Pepin, 741 to 768 AD. After the death of Muhammad, the Saracens, as Mohammedans are also called, became great warriors. They conquered many countries and established the Mohammedan religion in them. In 711, the Saracens invaded and conquered a great part of Spain and founded a powerful kingdom there, which lasted about 700 years. They intended to conquer the land of the Franks next, and then all Europe. They thought it would be easy to conquer the Franks, because the Frankish king at that time was a very weak man. He was one of a number of kings who were called the Do-Nothings. They reigned from about 638 to 751. They spent all their time in amusements and pleasures, leaving the affairs of the government to be managed by persons called Mayors of the Palace. The mayors of the palace were officers who at first managed the king's household. Afterwards, they were made guardians of kings who came to the throne when very young. So long as the king was under age, the mayor of the palace acted as chief officer of the government in his name. And as several of the young kings, even when they were old enough to rule, gave less attention to business than to pleasure, the mayors continued to do all the business until at last they did everything that the kings ought to have done. They made war, led armies in battle, raised money and spent it, and carried on the government as they pleased without consulting the king. The Do-Nothings had the title of king, but nothing more. In fact, they did not desire to have any business to do. The things they cared for were dogs, horses, and sport. One of the most famous of the mayors was a man named Pepin. Once a year, it is said, Pepin had the king dressed in his finest clothes and paraded through the city of Paris, where the court was held. A splendid throng of nobles and courtiers accompanied the king and did him honour as he went along the streets in a gilded chariot drawn by a long line of beautiful horses. The king was cheered by the people, and he acknowledged their greetings most graciously. After the parade, the king was escorted to the great hall of the palace, which was filled with nobles. Seated on a magnificent throne, he saluted the assemblage and made a short speech. The speech was prepared beforehand by Pepin and committed to memory by the king. At the close of the ceremony, the royal nobody retired to his country home and was not heard of again for a year. Pepin died in 714 AD, and his son Charles, who was 25 years old at that time, succeeded him as mayor of the palace. This Charles is known to history as Charles Martel. He was a brave young man. He had fought in many of his father's battles, and so had become a skilled soldier. His men were devoted to him. While he was mayor of the palace, he led armies in several wars against the enemies of the Franks. The most important of his wars was one with the Saracens, who came across the Pyrenees from Spain and invaded the land of the Franks, intending to establish Mohammedanism there. Their army was led by Abderrahman, the Saracen governor of Spain. On his march through the southern districts of the land of the Franks, Abderrahman destroyed many towns and villages, killed a number of the people, and seized all the property he could carry off. He plundered the city of Bordeaux and, it is said, obtained so many valuable things that every soldier was loaded with golden vases and cups and emeralds and other precious stones. But meanwhile, Charles Martel was not idle. As quickly as he could, he got together a great army of Franks and Germans and marched against the Saracens. The two armies met between the city of Tours and Poitiers in October 732. For 6 days, there was nothing but an occasional skirmish between small parties from both sides, but on the seventh day, a great battle took place. Both Christians and Mohammedans fought with terrible earnestness. The fight went on all day, and the field was covered with the bodies of the slain. But towards evening, during a resolute charge made by the Franks, Abdurrahman was killed. Then the Saracens gradually retired to their camp. It was not yet known, however, which side had won, and the Franks expected that the fight would be renewed in the morning. But when Charles Martel, with his Christian warriors, appeared on the field at sunrise, there was no enemy to fight. The Mohammedans had fled in the silence and the darkness of the night, and had left behind them all their valuable spoils. There was now no doubt which side had won. The Battle of Tours, or Poitiers, as it should be called, is regarded as one of the most decisive battles of the world. It decided that Christians, and not Muslims, should be the ruling power in Europe. Charles Martel is especially celebrated as the hero of this battle. It is said that the name Martel was given to him because of his bravery during the fight. Marteau is the French word for hammer, and one of the old French historians says that as a hammer breaks and crushes iron and steel, so Charles broke and crushed the power of his enemies in the Battle of Tours. But though the Saracens fled from the battlefield, they did not leave the land of the Franks, and Charles had to fight other battles with them before they were finally defeated. At last, however, he drove them across the Pyrenees, and they never again attempted to invade Frankland. After his defeat of the Saracens, Charles Martel was looked upon as the great champion of Christianity, and to the day of his death in 741, he was in reality, though not in name, the King of the Franks. Charles Martel had two sons, Pepin and Carloman. For a time, they ruled together, but Carloman wished to lead a religious life, so he went to a monastery and became a monk. Then Pepin was sole ruler. Pepin was quite low in stature, and therefore he was called Pepin the Short, but he had great strength and courage. A story is told of him, which shows how fearless he was. One day, he went with a few of his nobles to a circus to see a fight between a lion and a bull. Soon after the fight began, it looked as though the bull were getting the worst of it. Pepin cried out to his companions, "Will one of you separate the beasts?" But there was no answer. None of them had the courage to make the attempt. Then Pepin jumped from his seat, rushed into the arena, and with a thrust of his sword, killed the lion. In the early years of Pepin's rule, as mayor of the palace, the throne was occupied by a king named Childeric III. Like his father and the other do-nothing kings, Childeric cared more for pleasure and amusements than for affairs of government. Pepin was the real ruler, and after a while he began to think that he ought to have the title of king, as he had all the power and did all the work of governing and defending the kingdom. So he sent some friends to Rome to consult the Pope. They said to His Holiness, "Holy Father, who ought to be the King of France, the man who has the title, or the man who has the power and does all the duties of king?" Certainly, replied the Pope, the man who has the power and does the duties. Then surely, said they, Pepin ought to be king of the Franks, for he has all the power. The Pope gave his consent, and Pepin was crowned king of the Franks, and thus the reign of Childeric ended, and that of Pepin began. During nearly his whole reign, Pepin was engaged in war. Several times he went to Italy to defend the Pope against the Lombards. These people occupied certain parts of Italy, including the province still called Lombardy. Pepin conquered them and gave as a present to the Pope that part of their possessions which extended for some distance around Rome. This was called Pepin's donation. It was the beginning of what is known as the temporal power of the popes, that is, their power as rulers of a part of Italy. Pepin died in 768.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan.
Charlemagne, king from 768 to 814 AD. Pepin had two sons, Charles and Carloman. After the death of their father, they ruled together. But in a few years, Carloman died, and then Charles became sole king. This Charles was the most famous of the kings of the Franks. He did so many great and wonderful things that he is called Charlemagne, which means Charles the Great. He was a great soldier. For 30 years he carried on war against the Saxons. Finally, he conquered them, and their great chief, Witikind, submitted to him. The Saxons were a people of Germany who then lived near the land of the Franks. They spoke the same language and were of the same race as the Franks, but had not been civilized by contact with the Romans. They were still pagans, just as the Franks had been before Clovis became a Christian. They actually offered human sacrifices. After Charlemagne conquered them, he made their lands part of his kingdom. A great number of them, among whom was Witikind, then became Christians and were baptized, and soon they had churches and schools in many parts of their country. Another of Charlemagne's wars was against the Lombards. Pepin, as you have heard, had defeated the Lombards and given to the Pope part of the country held by them. The Lombard king now invaded the Pope's lands and threatened Rome itself, so the Pope sent to Charlemagne for help. Charlemagne quickly marched across the Alps and attacked the Lombards. He drove them out of the Pope's lands and took possession of their country. After he had conquered the Lombards, he carried on war in 778 in Spain. A large portion of Spain was then held by the Moorish Saracens, but a Mohammedan leader from Damascus had invaded their country, and the Moors invited Charlemagne to help them. He therefore led an army across the Pyrenees. He succeeded in putting his Moorish friends in possession of their lands in Spain, and then set out on his return to his own country. On the march, his army was divided into two parts. The main body was led by Charlemagne himself. The rear guard was commanded by a famous warrior named Roland. While marching through the narrow pass of Roncesvalles among the Pyrenees, Roland's division was attacked by a tribe called the Basques, who lived on the mountain slopes of the neighbouring region. High cliffs walled in the pass on either side. From the tops of these cliffs, the Basques hurled down rocks and trunks of trees upon the Franks and crushed many of them to death. Besides this, the wild mountaineers descended into the pass and attacked them with weapons. Roland fought bravely, but at the last he was overpowered, and he and all his men were killed. Roland had a friend and companion named Oliver, who was as brave as himself. Many stories and songs have been written telling of the wonderful adventures they were said to have had and of their wonderful deeds in war. The work of Charlemagne in Spain was quickly undone, for Abdurrahman, the leader of the Mohammedans, who had come from Damascus, soon conquered almost all the territory south of the Pyrenees. For more than 40 years, Charlemagne was king of the Franks, but a still greater dignity was to come to him. In the year 800, some of the people in Rome rebelled against the Pope, and Charlemagne went with an army to put down the rebellion. He entered the city with great pomp, and soon conquered the rebels. On Christmas Day, he went to the church of St. Peter, and as he knelt before the altar, the Pope placed a crown upon his head, saying, "Long live Charles Augustus, Emperor of the Romans." The people assembled in the church shouted the same words, and so Charlemagne was now Emperor of the Western Roman Empire, as well as King of the Franks. Charlemagne built a splendid palace at Aix-la-Chapelle, a town in Germany, where perhaps he was born. Charlemagne was a tall man, with long flowing beard and of noble appearance. He dressed in very simple style, but when he went into battle, he wore armour, as was the custom for kings and nobles, and often for ordinary soldiers in his day. Armour was made of leather or iron, or both together. There was a helmet of iron for the head, and a breastplate to cover the breast, or a coat of mail to cover the body. The coat of mail was made of small iron or steel rings linked together, or fastened onto a leather shirt. Coverings for the legs and feet were often attached to the coat. Charlemagne was a great king in many other ways besides the fighting of battles. He did much for the good of his people. He made many excellent laws and appointed judges to see that the laws were carried out. He established schools and placed good teachers in charge of them. He had a school in his palace for his own children, and he employed as their teacher a very learned Englishman named Alcuin. In those times, few people could read or write. There were not many schools anywhere, and in most places there were none at all. Even the kings had little education. Indeed, few of them could write their own names, and most of them did not care about sending their children to school. They did not think that reading or writing was of much use, but thought that it was far better for boys to learn to be good soldiers, and for girls to learn to spin and weave. Charlemagne had a very different opinion. He was fond of learning, and whenever he heard of a learned man living in any foreign country, he tried to get him to come and live in Frankland. The fame of Charlemagne as a great warrior and a wise emperor spread throughout the world. Many kings sent messengers to him to ask his friendship and bring him presents. Harun al-Rashid, the famous caliph who lived at Baghdad in Asia, sent him an elephant and a clock which struck the hours. The Franks were much astonished at the sight of the elephant, for they had never seen one before. They also wondered much at the clock. In those days, there were in Europe no clocks such as we have, but water clocks and hourglasses were used in some places. The water clock was a vessel into which water was allowed to trickle. It contained a float, which pointed to a scale of hours at the side of the vessel. The float gradually rose as the water trickled in. The hourglasses measured time by the falling of fine sand from the top to the bottom of a glass vessel, made with a narrow neck in the middle for the sand to go through. They were like the little glasses called ecktimers, which are used for measuring the time for boiling eggs. Charlemagne died in 814. He was buried in the church which he had built at Aix-la-Chapelle. His body was placed in the tomb, seated upon a grand chair, dressed in royal robes, with a crown on the head, a sword at the side, and a Bible in the hands. This famous emperor is known in history as Charlemagne, which is the French for the German name, Karl the Gross, Charles the Great, the name by which he was called at his own court during his life. The German name would really be a better name for him, for he was a German, and German was the language that he spoke. The common name of his favourite residence, Aix-la-Chapelle, also is French, but he knew the place as Aachen. The great empire, which Charlemagne built up, held together only during the life of his son. Then it was divided among his three grandsons. Louis took the eastern part, Lothair took the central part with the title of emperor, and Charles took the western part.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Egbert, king from 802 to 837 AD. Egbert the Saxon lived at the same time as Charlemagne. He was the first king who ruled all England as one kingdom. Long before his birth, the people who are known to us as Britons lived there, and they gave to the island the name Britain. But Britain was invaded by the Romans under Julius Caesar and his successors, and all that part of it which we now call England was added to the Empire of Rome. The Britons were driven into Wales and Cornwall, the western sections of the island. The Romans kept possession of the island for nearly 400 years. They did not leave it until 410, the year that Alaric sacked the city of Rome. At this time, the Roman legions were withdrawn from Britain. Some years before this, the Saxons, Angles and Jutes, German tribes, had settled near the shores of the North Sea. They learned much about Britain, for trading vessels, even at that early day, crossed the Channel. Among other things, the men from the north learned that Britain was crossed with good roads and dotted with houses of brick and stone, that walled cities had taken the place of tented camps, and that the country, for miles around each city, was green every spring, with waving wheat or white with orchard blossoms. After the Roman legions had left Britain, the Jutes, led, it is said, by two great captains named Hengist and Horsa, landed upon the southeastern coast and made a settlement. Britain proved a pleasant place to live in, and soon the Angles and Saxons also left the North Sea shores and invaded the beautiful island. The new invaders met with brave resistance. The Britons were headed by King Arthur, about whom many marvellous stories are told. His court was held at Caerleon in North Wales, where his 150 knights banqueted at their famous Round Table. The British king and his knights fought with desperate heroism, but they could not drive back the Saxons and their companions, and were obliged to seek refuge in the western mountainous parts of the island, just as their forefathers had done when the Romans invaded Britain. Thus, nearly all England came into the possession of the three invading tribes. Arthur and his knights were devoted Christians, for the Romans had not only made good roads and built strong walls and forts in Britain, but they had also brought the Christian religion further into the island. And at about the time of the Saxon invasion, St. Patrick was founding churches and monasteries in Ireland and was baptizing whole clans of the Irish at a time. It is said that he baptized 12,000 people with his own hand. Missionaries were sent out by the Irish Church to convert the wild Picts of Scotland, and at a later day the distant barbarians of Germany and Switzerland. The Saxons, Angles, and Jutes believed in the old Norse gods, and Chu and Woden, Thor and Frigga of Freya were worshipped on the soil of Britain for more than 100 years. The Britons tried to convert their conquerors, but the invaders did not care to be taught religion by those whom they had conquered, so the British missionaries found the work unusually hard. Aid came to them in a singular way. At some time near the year 575 AD, the Saxons quarrelled and fought with their old friends, the Angles. They took some Angles prisoners and carried them to Rome to be sold in the great slave market there. A monk named Gregory passed one day through the market and saw these captives. He asked the dealer who they were. "Angles," was the answer. "Oh," said the monk, "they would be angels instead of Angles if they were only Christians, for they certainly have the faces of angels." Years after, when that monk was the Pope of Rome, he remembered this conversation and sent the monk Augustine to England to teach the Christian religion to the savage but angel-faced Angles. Augustine and the British missionaries converted the Anglo-Saxons 200 years before the German Saxons were converted. Still, though both Angles and Saxons called themselves Christians, they were seldom at peace, and for more than 200 years they frequently fought. Various chiefs tried to make themselves kings, and at length there came to be no less than 7 small kingdoms in southern Britain. In 784, Egbert claimed to be heir of the kingdom called Wessex, but the people elected another man, and Egbert had to flee for his life. He went to the court of Charlemagne, and was with the great king of the Franks in Rome on Christmas Day 800, when the Pope placed the crown on Charles's head and proclaimed him emperor. Soon after this, a welcome message came to Egbert. The mind of the people in Wessex had changed, and they had elected him king. So bidding farewell to Charlemagne, he hurried off to England. Egbert had seen how Charlemagne had compelled the different quarrelling tribes of Germany to yield allegiance to him, and how, after uniting his empire, he had ruled it well. Egbert did in England what Charlemagne had done in Germany. He either persuaded the various petty kingdoms of the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes to recognize him as their ruler, or forced them to do so, and thus under him, all England became one united kingdom. But Egbert did even better than this. He did much to harmonize the different tribes by his wise conciliation. The name England is a memorial of this, for though Egbert himself was a Saxon, he advised that to please the Angles, the country should be called Anglia, that is, Angleland, or England, the land of the Angles, instead of Saxonia or Saxonland.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.